The Hard Shoulder on News Talk.
With the all-new Nissan Juke. The coupe crossover by Nissan. Nissan. Innovation that excites.
New CSOs, CSO figures, I beg your pardon, show that more than half of prisoners released from custody in 2014 reoffended within 3 years. Now, while the figures are down compared to previous years, they still suggest that Irish prisons are not effective when it comes to rehabilitating prisoners. Here to talk more about this is criminologist and former prison officer John Cuff and Gary Cunningham, who's an ex-prisoner and now best-selling author. You're both very welcome. Gary's in studio with me and John is on the line. John, I'm going to start with you. Are you surprised by the figures?
Not really, Mark. No, it will be what I've expected over the years. It's good to see that the figures are improving, but it's complex. It just doesn't start and end with the prison. We look at kind of wider society, how society interacts with crime, what we expect from prisons, all of that. There's no simple fix. If we look at some of these areas that people that wind up in prison come from, we have to look at the infrastructure there, the opportunities, that type of stuff. Mountjoy staff will tell you, I'm retired a long time now, but they've seen 3 and 4 generations coming through that system. And until we tackle it and stop looking at, say, kind of the British solutions or the American solutions, and maybe look at the Nordic solutions or Scandinavian, where they have a totally different way of viewing crime and investing in their people, I think we're going to get these figures year in, year out, that type of stuff, you know.
Well, of course, as you know, you will know John Lonergan, and you'll know him better than I do. And I've interviewed John on many occasions, and I think one of the oft-repeated stats that he gave me was that he felt that 60% of the people in Mountjoy that he dealt with were actually sick people, were ill people. They should have been in hospital, not in jail.
I would agree. And one of the things that has happened, Mark, over the years is that care in the community with the psychiatric services and the psychiatric hospitals, which was a great thing when they closed down the high walls and shut down all these that were in our large towns in Ireland and in Britain, nothing came to replicate them. So a lot of people that were psychiatrically ill or disturbed and whatever were picked up by the prison service, by the criminal justice system, by the Gardaí, and fed back into prisons. Quite a lot of people in prison have psychiatric problems, you know. So it's a one pick for all, that kind of thing. Just wind up in there.
How can we make sure that the figures keep declining, or how can we accelerate the decline in the figures? What changes need to happen, do you think?
Well, the usual ones, Mark. I mean, sustainable employment, proper wages. If we look at the average hour for somebody starting out, it's very, very low. Housing, all of this comes into play. So if people can't access work, it's education. If people are not educated, life opportunities, life chances, a lot depends on the dress where you come from. A lot depends on yourself, but not everybody has that kind of a confidence. So if you get caught in that net at a young age, it kind of repeats. If we take a look at, for example, the government's attitude and response to the hospitals over the years, the HSE, the housing, the education, they're not covered in glory there. So I don't think it'd be very unrealistic to expect that prisons would be outperforming any of these things. Sometimes I was very hard on the prisons when I was working on them myself, but now kind of when I look back on it, we actually did quite a good job with, you know, not an awful lot of resources or not a lot of energy pumped into the system. You know, it's kind of, once it's behind the walls, it's forgotten. You're looking at the reports today, we're talking about them, and again, it'll be another 6 or 7 months before something bubbles up to the surface to be discussed again, if you know what I mean, Mark.
Okay, now look, you in terms of rehabilitating offenders and you know, the cost of the state of people constantly reoffending, you know, the more support you put in, the more education you put in, the more chances you give them to improve their life and not go back to prison, it starts making prison look like a holiday camp. And there is a school of thought, and I'm sure you've heard it and encountered it, it's not a holiday camp. This is supposed to be a punishment. It's not rehab. These people are getting 3 square meals a day, clean bed, roof over their head, flat screen TV, and now they're getting access to courses and education and supports that people in the civilian population can't get.
Yeah, I agree with you. And that really is possibly slightly simplistic. I know where you're coming from, and I have heard that. I think anyone that's gone through the COVID, the initial lockdown, knows what it's like to lose your freedom. If you're locked up for 14 hours every single day, if you're dependent on someone opening and closing the door for you, this thing about the plasma TVs, if they're in it, and one or two might have them, they've bought them out of their own funds. Prisoners have a TV in the cell. Stop self-harm. I've done kind of research over the years. I actually experienced it when we put the TV feed into them, these small little televisions, when we put in self-sanitation in and stuff like that, self-harm, mutilation, fights, disputes, that kind of thing, drop down to nothing, like, you know. So prison is not a holiday camp. And until society decides that something else should come in its place, what they actually lose, Mark, and people find it hard to kind of swallow this, they actually lose their freedom. That's all you can take off them. After that, then, their subject is harsh enough. It's one visit a week, maybe two visits a week, or half an hour, one phone call. I wouldn't want to do it, put it that way. Like, you know, there is an impression out there. Of course, you have to feed them properly. It's true quality food, but I wouldn't expect anything less. Mm. I found that most disputes when I was in the service was over poor quality food in the initial years. Once that was addressed and got rid of, society itself must cure from the outside. The prison is the dustbin of society, as far as I'm concerned. It's the bold step. It's someone where we take out of circulation for a while, and people will get relief from that. You put them into prison, it's 6 months, you don't have to look at them, put up with them if they're a bully, a thug, or whatever, and without a shadow of a doubt, murder, rape, serious crime like that, there's only one place for them, is prisons. Unfortunately, in prisons we also have people for simple things like TV license, for debt, for not fines and that type of stuff. So we have a whole jumble stuck into a kind of a one fist. And it's never really got a chance to come up for air and decide what type of prisons we want, who should be going into our prisons. And it's also kind of quite class-based. I'm working class, I'm proud of it. But it's that class backwards that winds up in prison. Take a look up the ladder, very few ever go to prison, and some quite serious stuff. You know,
okay.
Some serious fraud. You know.
Thank you, John. That's John Cuff. There's a criminologist and former prison officer. You're listening to News Talk, and we are talking about the new CSO figures that show that more than half of prisoners released from custody in 2014 reoffended within 3 years. And what is it, the Dostoevsky quote about you can measure society by how it treats its prisoners? Well, Gary Cunningham is an ex-prisoner. Gary, how does the Irish prison system treat its prisoners during their incarceration and also afterwards?
Thank you, Mark. First of all, John, I've met you before. We were actually in this very studio together. I don't know if you remember speaking to me. And in no way, shape or form do I want to disagree with what you've just said. But there's something I feel that's imperative to say at the start here. If I didn't want to know what it was like in prison, I shouldn't have broke the law. And I think when you want to have a discussion of this manner, I think society as a whole will, I'm sure there's guys and girls at home that are now that are driving home their cars and they're thinking, oh, the poor prisoner, the bleeding heart prisoner. I've took a very different slant to that. From the time I was on the Late Late Show, my opening line was, I was in prison for being a narcissistic, selfish person. Mm-hmm. It was my fault. So I just wanted to say that first of all, because I think that's important to say. This shouldn't be about the poor prisoner. If you like, the way I firmly believe that I was treated very well in prison. And in fact, the very first media outlet that wrote a piece about me, that the headline was "Prison saved my life," and it did. Now I do realise I'm in the minority with this. In prison itself, I went back into prisons after my first book came out, and I was giving a talk in Portlaoise, and this might interest you. A young man put his hand up, and he could see he was struggling with addiction, and he did this on purpose. He sabotaged my talk because the governor was in the room, and he didn't actually want to talk to me. He wanted to talk to the governor, and he said something that I fully agree with. He said, "Can I ask you a question, Gary?" I said, "Certainly." He said, "Would you put your clothes into a broken washing machine?" And I smiled and I said, "No." I knew where he was going. Mm. And he said, "No, hang on. If you put them into the broken washing machine, would you expect them to come out okay?" And I said, "Absolutely not." He said, "Well, I don't understand how people outside think that we're meant to come out okay when the process of rehabilitation in prison is defunct." And my personal experience is now I'm released since 2014, but it wasn't great. The process of rehabilitation wasn't great. Even the transition from a closed prison to an open prison, I'll be honest with you, it was that much of a mind mess with me that within my first week of being in an open prison, I asked to be transferred back to the hell of what is a closed prison.
Why?
Because I was institutionalised completely. It was night and day. I went from, as John just said, when to go to sleep, when to wake up, when to move, to the first officer I met in Lock and House handed me a key and said, "Yeah, just be in your room at 6 and 9 for a check." And I said, "Well, what do I do now?" "So whatever you want, you can go to the library." And I didn't like it, Mark. I didn't like it. I was so used to, and this is a common reoccurrence with prisoners when they get shifted. I don't knock or bash the Irish prison service. I think they do as good as they can. But I do believe that the process of rehabilitation there should be more emphasis on that, in my opinion.
Okay, well, look, whatever rehabilitation you undergo or support you get in prison is one thing, and they give you the tools to hopefully be able to successfully deal with life afterwards. What happens when you get out? How are you treated afterwards?
Well, this is the thing. So I have been on this in this studio talking in length. Now, going back to when I was released, it was around 60-65% was the reoffending rate within the first 2 or 3 years. And I do believe, I was one of the lucky ones, but maybe because of how I did it, I put myself out there and said, look, this is what I did, this is the law I broke, and I'm not blaming my childhood, I'm not blaming my mental health. I did it because I was narcissistic and I wasn't a nice person. And I take full responsibility for that. And I think that worked in my favour. But having said that,
did you publicly back yourself into a corner so that you couldn't fall again? Was that the strategy?
To be honest with you, that's very, very, very close to the truth. I came out of
prison. I did the same to give up cigarettes, by the way.
I could have availed of the probation services, and I didn't. And I didn't for the simple reason that I felt I wasn't ready to come back into society. I was an alcoholic. And even though I had done so much work on myself, and I was proved right, I was drunk within hours of being released. But when I tried to gain employment, this is my slant on this for what it's worth, and that's why I wanted for anyone that's listening, I'm not playing the bleeding heart here or the violin. When I was going to try and gain employment, I found it nigh on impossible. And I actually went to a hotel not too far from here, and I was a painter and decorator, and I went for the job as a painter, and it turned out my late father had his own company, and the guy interviewing me knew my dad. A 10-minute interview turned into a 40-minute conversation. And at the end of it, he said to me, basically, the job is yours. And as he did that, because it was a hotel, he handed me a sheet of paper comparable to what you're holding.
Yeah.
And the very first question was, have you ever been incarcerated?
And I remember the very first question?
The very, very top of the page. If you're not asked it, like this, like me and you, it's usually one of the first two questions.
Oh, right, okay.
Now, I understand. I completely understand. But I don't agree with it, unfortunately. And I know people are probably going to go mad because I said that. But what happened was, I came out and I rang the Irish Penal Reform Trust. And I suppose the first thing I asked was, should I lie? And I spent, as an alcoholic, I spent a lifetime being a lawyer. And the woman, she was wonderful. She said, absolutely not. Today's day, they just have to Google you. She said, here's a bit of advice. Handwrite a little note, put it inside, and put in your application. Now, please keep in mind that this man had just told me the job was mine.
Mm.
I was completely qualified for the role of a maintenance painter. He knew my dad. It's not what you know you too, you know. And at the time, actually, sorry, I was under a social welfare scheme. I think it was Springboard or something, where I had a caseworker. That's very important, actually. I received a generic email 2-3 days later saying I wasn't successful. And the guy who looked after me in the social welfare, he rang this particular hotel and he asked me to be quiet. And I sat and he had me on speakerphone. And the guy who interviewed me, he got on the phone, the maintenance manager. And Shane said, I'm just picking up on Gary Cunningham. He didn't even get the Cunningham out. And he says, the one that got away. He said, if this was my hotel, I'd have employed him yesterday. But there's a remit with this company. And what I find is, a lot of prisoners, the way I look at this one is, and I don't know if people will agree, if a man or woman has come out of prison after serving their time, we do know that there's a culture out there that don't have no want to change. They'll happily go in and out. It's a revolving door. But I shouldn't be tarnished with that brush. I have a want and a drive to better my life. And I was being knocked back. They do say this wonderful saying, and you hear it a lot in prison, that cash is king, that you need money to survive. And my thing is, maybe if you were means tested in some way, like I'm a painter, I was arrested with cannabis and I'm going to work in a hotel. I wasn't done for theft. I wasn't done. Surely they could take that into consideration, maybe, I don't know. But one thing that scared me a lot, I wrote about it in my second book, is that a prisoner came over to my apartment when he was released. And he had got himself a little job, and the police, he was a terrible guy, this guy. Now, he'll admit that himself. And the police tripped him up and went to his boss and just gave his boss a bit of information about what his past was like. The guy lost his job. And he came over, and I write about this in my book. He came over and he sat with me. We were having a coffee, and he said something that made my blood run cold. He looked at me and he says, I just want to go on the straight and narrow, but it's not money, Gary, but I know how to make money, so that's what I'm going to do. And we all know what he was talking about. He was going to go back down the road of what we're talking about today, which is reoffend. Now, I'm not saying that every single case does this. Some of these guys, I would even argue that the majority of these guys and girls are people that just don't want to rehabilitate themselves. They've no problem going in and out of prison.
It's been the family business for generations.
It's what they do. It's what they know. But I brought untold shame to my family. I will never reoffend because Mountjoy scared the bejesus out of me. But on top of that, I do feel that years later, if you don't mind me saying, we're looking at the Green Party, who are hanging their heads in shame today because they appointed to the state body a DJ who in 1997 had a drug conviction and they want him to be taken off. I think this is disgraceful. What hope have I got? That's so many years ago. This man was doing reports on the nighttime industry because he's a DJ. He was talking about opening hours and stuff like that. And now the Green Party are being told to hang their heads in shame because 96 or 97 DJ, I can't think of his name, had a drug conviction, which he didn't go to prison for. He got a suspended sentence. And I'm just thinking about this today, and I was reading about it outside actually before I came in, and I was thinking, what chance have I got? I'm not on the Green Party. And,
Gary, do you know what? You make a very good point. You make a lot of very good points, but you make the most important very good point that you made there was, is that if we don't want people to go back to prison, we have to treat them like normal human beings when they come out. Because if we don't start with that, then they have no chance and they're going to end up back there.
My argument with that, and I totally agree with you, is if you're the employer, if you're Mark and this is your company and I've come today, and the fact that I'm wearing the short and tie, the fact that I'm here in your office, I have made that decision in myself that I want to try and better my life. The guy and the girl that we just spoke about who doesn't want that is not going to go to that interview.
That's a very good point. Gary, this is a conversation that we could have spend an awful lot more time on. We haven't, but we've got through a lot of thinking. You've given us a lot to think about. That's Gary Cunningham, who's a former prisoner, author, and also John Cuff, criminologist as well. Thank you to both of you.